Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. March 8th marks International Women's Day. It's an annual opportunity for us to take stock of where we are in terms of in our pursuit for gender equality, the progress that we've made and the remaining barriers that women face. One dimension that we should assess is the representation and participation of women in governance and politics. Now, despite vocal support of a minimum 30% women's representation in Dewan Rakyat, only 14.4% of our members of parliament are women. Tonight, let's look beyond the numbers and focus on the root causes that keep women from participating in political life. Kasturi Patu joins us now. She's the MP of Batu Kawan and International Secretary for DAP Women. Kasturi, this year's International Women's Day, the theme is hashtag break the bias. I'm sure you've heard that. I'm just wondering, when it comes to women's participation in politics, what does that bias, that conscious or unconscious bias, what does that look like?
Thank you, Melissa and Astro Awani, for embarking on this celebration, International Women's Day celebration with the theme, Breaking the Bias. I think today, with globalization, we get to see the performance of women leaders all over the world. And we make a comparison to why there is a gap or a space that needs to be filled by women representatives in the Malaysian Parliament. And not only that, I speak for state assemblies in every state and also the upper house, the Senate. With the theme of breaking the bias, I think it's time for women to step up and claim that ownership and claim that space to say, I want to be a part of this movement, I want to be a part of the change. And I see with my own eyes, I've witnessed and I observe things that happen around me, and it calls me to fight against this injustice, it calls me to fight against this sexism, misogyny, and to be a defender of human rights, to be a defender of freedom, equality, and for good governance. And if we look globally, countries that have women leaders have shown stark differences of corruption within government or within the inner and outer circle of a government structure. And this shows why, evidently, we need more women in politics, and particularly in Malaysia, more women in the Dewan Rakyat. Now, when we say break the bias, it means that we are going against norm, we're going against social expectations, we're going against what has been ingrained into society to perceive what a woman's role is. For centuries, women have always been thought to be part of the household, so much so they appear to be part of the furniture in the house as well, to take care of the kitchen, to take care of the family, to ensure that the family is healthy and safe. But today in 2022, we have seen decades of campaign by women NGOs, particularly in Malaysia, civil society, academicians, and also in comparison, our international friends and lawmakers across the world calling for shared responsibility in the house, because it starts at home. And when women know that this shared responsibility exists, it gives them a platform to venture and say, I want to be a part of something else. Now, in 2018, I noticed during election campaigns, many mothers came out to observe and watch our rallies and our ceramahs, which was something you had not seen previously before, because it was mostly men who attended it. And that struck me very, very hard, that when mothers take to the streets, when women take to the streets, your country is in trouble. So in order to break that bias, women have to step up and say, I want to do this. I care enough for my country. I care enough for my people. I care enough for what is happening in the world. And I want to be a part of this to stop this injustice. Right. But the onus is also on political parties to create that platform to groom women leaders and to ensure that we create a safe space for women, especially young women who want to venture. You have your heart in the right place, but you don't know how to move into it. You know, it is up to us to create a safe space where toxic politics is out the window. There's no place and time for toxic politics whether it's in Malaysia, whether it's in the ASEAN region or in the world.
Right. Excellent points that you brought up shows that there are multiple barriers, multiple obstacles for women still. And I guess each obstacle requires a different type of solution. Let's talk a little bit about what you said. So you talked about political parties and I'm wondering in terms of capacity gaps. So you also talked about support at home. So capacity gaps where women are less likely to have the support of not just the family and those at home and the household, but also from the political party. So when they are, rising through the ranks of a political party, they may not have the same type of access or education or contacts or resources afforded to them to as compared to, say, a male counterpart. How would political parties look to address that, the capacity gaps inequality that some women in the political arena face?
So I believe it begins with political parties recognizing that there is a gap and that young women and women in general who want to be to be involved directly or actively in politics, that the political parties understand that there are already glass ceilings in place. When women say, "I want to be a part of this, I want to be active in politics," and it's the onus is on the party to address those and to offer the support to these women. And one of the ways is to engage with members to explain to them why setting a quota is important. Now, I hope one day we don't need to look at quotas anymore. But Malaysia is not ready, and it's not at a time where we can do away with the quota system. So having a minimum 30% quota, whether it is in the top leadership of the individual parties, whether it is in state level, whether it is in branch level, that must be set, which means that you incorporate and you institutionalize the need to have more than one gender dominating meetings, dominating decision making process. And for the DAP, we have already done that. We will be having our National Congress this month, and it would see a 30% fill up of women in the top leadership decision-making position in the party. I know other parties are also aiming to do that, but the DAP has already put that on paper. So we will see more women representation in the decision-making part of DAP after the National Congress. But it's also to bring the conversation down to your mamak shops and your family WhatsApp groups, and why it is so important for parents also to be supportive of their family members and external family members, the inner circle, the outer circle, to say, yes, we need this kind of person in politics, why not? And to be honest, there are different yardsticks that are used to measure the abilities of a female who wants to actively join politics versus a male. There's always a question to a female who wants to be in politics, are you planning to tie the knot soon? And if yes, would your partner will be happy with you in politics? Are you planning to start a family? And what about your family right now, your children right now? But you rarely see these sort of questions directed to men. Very rarely, these sort of family-oriented questions are asked towards men who are active in politics, who want to be active in politics. It's somewhat a burden for women to be able to justify and explain in great detail how they're going to manage their time if they want to be active in politics. And I think we have to do away with this. If a question is going to be asked to a female who wants to be active in politics, how she's going to manage her time, I believe the same question has to be asked to a male. How will he manage his time? With shared responsibility, with the role of father and mother important in the lives of children to keep a family healthy, to keep a family safe, to fulfill that structure. I mean, this is, of course, not discounting single mothers and single fathers who also aim to be active in politics. There has to be that greater understanding why this is a role for anyone and everyone who has their heart in the right place, who are brave enough not to toe the line and to say, no, look, we have to address the elephant in the room. We need to change these sort of systems. We need to change laws. We need to change policies. And this is why I'm here for.
Kasturi, you mentioned the need to create a safe space for women who are thinking about joining the political life. And I'm just wondering, there's so much kind of gender-based violence, particularly online, towards female politicians. They seem more targeted, more harsh and hostile compared to male counterparts. And I'm just wondering, how does this prevent young women, particularly, from entering the political arena? And how do we modify that? But especially if you're thinking about, you know, women who go on the campaign trail, who are contesting a seat, how that targeted gendered abuse and harassment may impact their chances of winning.
I think this is a really good point. And in this borderless world, we get to see how women leaders all over the world deal with sexism, misogyny, hate speech. They get judged by the way they look. There's plenty of body shaming. And very rarely you hear a female who is active in politics or want to be active in politics criticize over policies, over her thoughts, her ideas, her vision, and her hope. And this culture also must end and must stop. But there's two parts to this. There is the education and the awareness, and there's also the enforcement. Now, if we had adequate laws in the country, sufficient laws in the country, good laws, robust laws in the country that enables enforcement agencies to go after perpetrators who bully women who are active in politics online, sexual harassment online, the sexism, the misogyny, the body shaming, the racism, the religious bigotry that is imposed on them, then it sort of sets a standard that the government is intolerant to this sort of language targeted towards women of any age, any gen, any age, any ethnic background, and even political standing. First and foremost, it cannot be seen as there's some sort of a protection or immunity for those who are part of the establishment, and then there's a free flow of insults that can be thrown against women who are from civil society and also from opposing teams. So I think this is something there's room for us to work on, but there's not much time. But this has been a conversation that civil society has brought up also for decades. That we need to have robust laws on sexual harassment, whether it is in the flesh or whether it is online. And right now, to have a standalone anti-bullying act. And this also will provide a platform. But let's not also forget that men are also victims of bullying and harassment online and hate speech as well, including death threats. And if the government views this seriously, that a man has been threatened that he would be killed, or what more, a VIP or a VVIP or even a royalty, I mean, you could see at rocket speed the enforcement being taken to hunt the person down, to track the person down. And the next thing you know, you see that person right on this face splashed on all the newspapers and the news, and this is the guy who insulted so-and-so. But you don't see that happening so much with women, particularly from women who are members of CSOs. And this needs to change. When the government acts very lightly, you are allowing this sort of behavior. You are condoning the behavior if you don't come down hard on them. But on the other hand, there's a great deal of awareness that needs to be carried out. And I think it starts in school. It has to be spoken about at places of worship, in universities. It has to be spoken about in your WhatsApp groups to discuss about whether a person asked for it or not, whether a person deserved this sort of language being thrown against them. And we have seen over the months, every time a minister or a deputy minister has a gaffe, in through a speech or through an action, you find that there's a lot of insults against them online. But there's a very thin line between what is satire, what is genuine insult, or that they have failed to live up to the expectation of morality and civility by the people. And then there is what is hate speech and violence online, propagated violence online, up to rape threats and death threats. So
that's right.
There's education, awareness, and then there's enforcement.
Kasturi, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We appreciate your time. Kasturi Patu, MP of Batukawan and International Secretary for DAP Women. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned to consider this. Hi, thanks so much for staying with me on Consider This. We're marking International Women's Day today by assessing the structural barriers that that keep more women from actively pursuing politics and in participating in governance and political life. Let's speak now to Joanna Sue Henley Rumpus. She is deputy head of Wirawati, which is Warisan's young women's wing. Joanna, the reality is for women, we face multiple obstacles when it comes to participating in political life. And each obstacle, I think, requires a different solution, a different type of, addressing it requires a different type of nuance. But let's talk about the role of political parties in particular. And I want to ask you how exclusion from within the political party, whether exclusion or chauvinism, whatever you want to call it, at the party level may be hindering women from either being more active or rising within the party or even contesting in seats that become available.
Well, first of all, kapisanangan, Melissa, and thank you very much for having me today. Well, when we look at the current scenario, you know, stereotyping and gender bias still exists in our society today. When we look at this year's theme of International Women's Day, which is Break the Bias and seems highly appropriate. Before I go on any further, perhaps we can look at history briefly, you know, when we've seen dramatic changes with regards to women's rights that begins in the early 19th centuries. But despite 2022, and sad to say, you know, after a long struggle, we still have to deal with bias against women. When we talk about politics, now the female population accounts for half of Malaysia's population, you know, having substantial amount of influence in all sectors, you know, despite this exceeding male in education, you know, the Department of Statistics of Malaysia in 2021 has stated that the participation of women in politics and the workforce is still lagging behind. But then generally speaking, I'm glad to say and I'm proud to say that we women can engage in all sectors of national development, be it economics, be it politics, you know, decision making at the highest level. But I have to say that, you know, barriers and bias still exist among women, be it visible or invisible barriers. Well, increasingly, we have seen, you know, in Malaysia right now that, you know, the Malaysian society has been perceived as more outspoken when it comes to challenges when we face against women. You see more and more NGOs, we have seen more and more politicians and even public are being more vocal about women issues. But I think, you know, there are two main factors that hinders women participating in politics. And I will say that into two categories. First is the micro point of view. It's more of the personal issue where, you know, women have to carry out their essential responsibilities as a wife and as a mother, you know. Mm-hmm. Secondly, when we are looking at the macro point of view, we're looking at the framework of the broader society, you know, here in Malaysia, where the patriarchal tradition is deeply ingrained in the social fabric of the country. You know, there's a lack of family friendly policies, which makes it very, very hard for women to juggle between their responsibilities and their career. And I think that there's also a lack of women and support when it comes to advancement in leadership. You know, politics, you know, I would like to go a bit further about politics since I am in this field. It is often being depicted as a man's world, you know, it's a big boys game. And I have to admit that politics is a male-dominated a field. And sometimes, Melissa, it can be quite intimidating, you know, over the last 3, 4 years, 5 years that I've been being in politics, you're the only woman in the room with full of male in a room. But, you know, gender issues affects women more than male in politics. And this is because I think that, you know, society does not see women being synonymous in the field of politics, because it is seen to be rather unpleasant and very intense for female.
Can I ask you then how to change the scenario? Because I completely agree with you. There are, I guess, push factors, pull factors that prohibit women from wanting to participate in political life. But taking your example, your experience in the last general elections where you did not manage to win your seat, right? Can we change that for the better for the next general elections, where Warisan may be thinking about contesting in more seats outside of Sabah, looking at Semenanjung Malaysia as well? You know, you want to increase participation of women. You want to be fielding more female candidates. The prep work starts now, right, Joanna?
Yes, indeed. As I mentioned just now, Melissa, we're talking about, you know, there is a lack of support when it comes to advancement or let's say, you know, leadership skills. I have encountered quite a number of very dynamic and brilliant young women who would contribute much to the, you know, policy making of this country, for the state of Sabah. You know, I'm talking about specifically from the state of Sabah because I reside here. But then, you know, it still goes back to where they said that, you know, the lack of political skills. But I believe that, you know, for us to encourage more women to participate in politics, I believe, you know, any political institution must be first prepared to evolve, you know, not to succumb to the conventional norm of seeing that women are just support groups rather than to see women as partners. And I think to level the playing field, we need more vibrant and brilliant young women to engage with. But aside from gender issues, Melissa, I think I have to also pinpoint this, that, you know, I believe there is also a compelling need for political organizations to have an agenda that defends the democratic system. You see, a political entity that promotes the agenda of good governance to prevent the trust deficit, especially to new young voters. Now we have only 18, we have automatic registration. So, you know, until then, we will see more young women and men being in politics. I give you an example, Melissa. You see, now we see that, you know, we find it very, very difficult for lawmakers to support laws and policies on gender. An example would be, you know, the Sexual Harassment Act, for example. You know, this is a huge, huge, huge concern in our society today. And then since 2001, you know, women rights organizations have tried so hard to introduce, to curb sexual harassment. But, you know, it took so long for it to be, you know, even having a table, a bill that is tabled in 2021. You know, studies have shown that they've encountered stiff pushback from state patriarchal forces. So, you know, I think, I mean, Sexual Harassment Act is forthcoming indeed, but there's still gaps that need to be filled in and right, need to be done. You know, in fact, in Sabah itself, you know, we need, we are in dire need for the Sabah Labour Ordinance to be updated. With regards to protecting women or sexual harassment in the workplace. Unfortunately, you know, our sisters in Sabah are not protected by the Employment Act of 1995 because it does not go beyond the jurisdiction of West Malaysia. So we have our own labor ordinance. And, you know, even here in Sabah, we also face these issues too. Yeah.
Okay. Can I speak about sexual harassment? Because I think that's a really interesting topic, particularly if you look at the kind of harassment and abuse and intimidation that women in the political arena face far more than their male counterparts. Joanna, I'm wondering, I mean, just if you're comfortable, based on your personal experience, to share with us whether that, in your experience, may hinder young women from wanting to participate in political life when they see this kind of abuse, particularly online, being leveled at female politicians.
Yeah, well, I'm talking from a personal point of view, you know, I've of course came across these kind of situation when I joined politics, but then, you know, at the end of the day, Melissa, if you know what you're talking about, and if you are confident enough to speak out your mind and to fight for what you believe for, and I think, you know, that does not hinder anyone to be participating in politics. But again, as I said earlier, you know, in our conversation, you know, it is just the, you know, the intensity that you face in politics, and we get it more with women. I have to agree that, yeah.
Can I ask you whether, because of this type of hostility towards female politicians, whether that in any way impinges or impedes or hinders your campaigning? For instance, when you were campaigning for your in the last general elections, did that change the way you campaigned, and did that hinder some of your chances perhaps in winning because of the type of negative feedback you'd get from online or from the ground?
Well, I stood for election when I was about 28 years old. So, yeah, so that is considered quite young. I'm from you know, West Malaysia. I think that is quite okay, but maybe, you know, things are a little bit different here in Sabah. You know, there is this general perception that, you know, only those who are a bit more with a bit more experiences, or with a bit more, you know, they've been in the field for quite some time, that I think the voters tend to vote for the ones who have more experience. I don't think that it's more of me being a woman, because we have seen, you know, my colleague YB Munira, who also stood for election, and she won it with a landslide majority. You have also, you know, other women who stood for election, and they did very well. But I think there is also, we also need to look at the demographics and geography of where women are placed or mm-hmm. being candidates. But I have to say that maybe in the interior areas, there still needs a little bit of perspective change. I would say like a mind shift of change, to accept that, you know, women and young women, especially young women, could also contribute and perhaps have new and fresh ideas in nation building.
Brilliant. I guess it's that intersection of age and gender as well.
Yes.
Joanna, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Appreciate your time. Joanna Sue Henley Rumpus, Deputy Head of Wirawati Warisan's Young Women's Wing. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.